to our board. Please think about running. Again, go to WBAI.org for more information. And thank you.
It's been said that an image is worth a thousand words. A concept implying that a single visual element can replace a multitude of descriptive factors, that one image can carry meaning and definition far more adequately than any verbal or written description. In the case of our own definitions, that is, as Native American people, why have we been reduced to a single word, a single silhouette? Red skin. One word, two syllables. Labeled in many dictionaries as a noun, dated or offensive, and simply defined, an American Indian.
Sego, this is John Kane. Join me for a free screening of More Than a Word, Thursday, September 27th, 7 p.m. at the Brooklyn Commons, 388 Atlantic Avenue, right here in Brooklyn, New York.
Congressmember Nydia Velazquez from Brooklyn spoke out at the New York City Stands with Survivors rally at City Hall.
Senator Mitch McConnell, Senator Grassley, do you see us? Because we see you, we hear you, and we don't believe you. We have reached a tipping point in American culture. For too long, women everywhere have been silent about the abuses they suffer regularly. No longer will men in power, from Wall Street to the state legislatures, to Congress, to yes, our courts, be given a pass when they engage in harassment or abuse or assault.
This is listener-sponsored WBAI New York.
So it is. You are listening to WBAI New York. The time is just about 8 o'clock, and that means it's time once again for another exciting edition of Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
Kyle.
Hello.
And Alex.
Good evening.
Well, here we all are. Trump gave a 90-minute press conference earlier today, so needless to say, we got no work done because we're riveted to that. But wow, you'll be hearing, I think, all kinds of excerpts, including, of course, Mr. Kurd. Which is what he wound up calling a Kurdish reporter. Yeah, there's so much to digest with just not enough time. I think he times these things so that we don't have enough time to digest it and talk about it intelligently. But we have other things to talk about, lots of other things in the world of technology, in the world of hacking, in the world of fun and new things. Speaking of which, at the very beginning of the show, we should focus, I think, on what happened over the weekend, which was Maker Faire that we all were at some point, right?
We were indeed.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that's good. And hopefully a lot of listeners, I know a lot of listeners were there because we met you. And I want to thank you for coming and for being a part of it. But what magic that is. Now, Alex, you came with your son.
I did.
Was it his first time?
It was indeed. We tried to go last year, if you recall.
And
we
tried to find parking in Corona.
Yes, we made the very big mistake of trying to find parking in Corona during Maker Faire when it seems like everybody there has some kind of minor driveway that is, you know, decreases the available parking
spots.
It's
their driveway. They're very proud of their driveways. You do not park in front of their driveways.
I don't know. It drove me mad. Uh-huh. It drove me mad last year. So we didn't make that mistake. This year we took the subway. And then the long walk.
Let me just tell you about the subway. We didn't know about this last week, and I'm sorry to anybody who went through this. They closed the station that was going to Maker Faire as you're coming from the city. And it's kind of cool because when you bypass it, you go way up high above the station on that track that they use for the express trains. I'd never done that before. But then you had to go to Metz Willis Point and come back one stop. It was pretty simple if you knew what was going on. The first day, we didn't know what was going on. So, yeah, sorry about that. I don't think the MTA told Maker Faire about that.
No, and we almost went accidentally to a Paul Simon concert because there were all these signs.
Don't let that happen. I mean, a few years ago, maybe, but I don't think it's... Yeah.
In their defense, I think this is the MTA's way of saying that they make stuff too.
Yes, that's a good point. Not always the best things. There were much better devices, I think, at Maker Faire.
And there's much worse things that could happen than accidentally going to a Paul Simon concert. Don't get me wrong there.
That's true.
But, you know, it's... I mean, you could have gone to the Kanye West concert last year. They were having the exact same time. That would have been confusing.
That's true. But you're right.
But you made it.
You know, it was my son's first Maker Faire, and if you recall correctly, as soon as he saw you, he just wanted to leave.
He ran the other way.
He did. Well,
it's a normal reaction most kids have, and it's actually a good test of their instincts.
This is true, but it really had nothing to do with your charisma or your natural sense of affability. It was more to do with the fact that he was so incredibly overwhelmed by everything happening around him, by this gigantic hand picking up cars and crushing them.
Isn't that amazing?
In front of his face. It was very, very cool. There were all kinds of robots.
The tow truck people were taking no prisoners. They were very strict. If you parked in the wrong place, your car got crushed. That's how it works. That's how it should work.
Yeah. He's still talking to this day and telling all of his friends about how cool it was that he met R2-D2 at Maker Faire. And then he told me on the way out that, Daddy, this was the most amazing thing ever. I met R2-D2. Did you know that he's a real hero? And I said, yes, I did. And I said, I never met R2-D2 before. It was really, really was very cool. So it was an awesome time. And then after he met R2-D2 and saw the races, the car races, those like kind of makeshift go-karts that people were making, and walked around the whole thing about seven times, he finally was calm enough to sit and hang out at the 2600 van with us for a while.
And so many people were coming up to the van. And Kyle, I have to say, the phone booth, the 1950s phone booth, what a hit that was, especially with kids. What do you attribute that to?
Well, it's fascinating. It's a sort of a closed space, and it's wood. It's got this sort of warm, I don't know, and warm feel, and you're kind of stepping into the past almost. This rotary dial phone, mysterious device, and we basically leave it open and encourage people to check it out. And the way we set it up was so that people could have like a two-way sort of private intercom. Basically, one person, maybe somebody's parent, picks up a phone and then their student or goes and picks up the other end, basically is able to say hi, and you know, they can basically have this kind of private conversation. And all we did is just add a battery. I mean, it's a very simple technology, some microphones and some speakers and a battery. So that gives us the ability to, instead of say, hey, look at our old phone booth that's not working, it's like, yeah, it kind of works, and hey, you can go talk on it. So what do you want? So and that ends up being really entertaining because so many of the young people, their concept of speaking on the phone or using communications technology is based on sort of tablets, touch screens, and different chat and I guess emojis too now. I don't know. But this is a totally different way. And I think parents too, they get kind of a kick out of it, but also they're sort of like over it because they've been using them their whole lives. So the whole range of reactions is the best. And it makes our table and the project there that much more exciting. And it's been just basically something we were motivated to do from going to Maker Faire and getting ideas and putting it all together into something.
And you know, it's one of my favorite things to do, to ask the kids who came up to the table, show them. We had a number of rotary phones, including the phone booth, but also a couple of desktop phones. And we would ask the kids who come up, you know, can you dial us a number on this? And watching the ones who had seen it in films or whatever, and they can do it, but they've never touched one in real life and had that kind of awe about it. And other ones who had never, like, even seen it or know or seen how it works or anything like that, and so they're just trying to figure it out and poking and prodding at it. And then that experience of actually being able to go into a phone booth, close the door, pick up the phone, and talk to somebody, I think added so much. And you know, it's a taste of the past, really, and it's a little taste of how things used to be and how things used to work. And it's fun for the parents, it's fun for the kids, it was fun for us. I mean, I think it's safe to say we all had a great time just operating all this and letting this happen. And I think it was even fun for the Lilo and Stitch lunchbox that housed the battery for the phone system there.
Well, it just amazed me how into it the kids were. I mean, you would think something as old as a phone booth, let alone a phone booth with a rotary phone inside it, would be something that wouldn't appeal to them. Instead, it seemed to be one of the highlights for them. I saw one kid ran across almost the entire parking lot, a beeline right into the phone booth. I'm not sure what game he was playing, but you know, he knew exactly where he was going.
I think he was playing the time. He was like speed making, basically, because it was time to go, and he was trying to get everything before he really had to be pulled out the door by mom and dad. But yeah, I mean, the questions too, the curiosity. They see this, they want to know, okay, whether it's, you know, how it was used then, or how we're reinterpreting it or using it now. Or, you know, why I have it set up this way and how we're able to repurpose something that's sort of an older, outmoded technology. They just are full of questions and curiosity and are able to have that conversation with us and in their families and friend groups. And it's really a really cool chance to talk about telephones and communicating.
And what was so cool was this scene repeated itself over and over again, where you'd basically show them, as Rob said, either a phone that was on the desk or the payphone itself, and then you tell them that you can talk to this princess phone that's on the desk from the payphone. All you have to do is pick it up and talk. And, you know, these are kids coming with their parents who they've, you know, known for some time, and they were just with them. And yet the thrill that they go through by hearing their voice on the phone from inside the phone booth, it's something that surprises me. And, you know, I'm a sucker for old technology and being captivated by the simple things. But to see this, to see that their eyes light up at this, I to this day, I really don't understand why it's so incredibly alluring to them. And I'm trying to figure out what it is about the technology, that particular technology. And I think it's got something to do with the fact that it's more accessible. You know, you actually see the phone working. You can take it apart. You can understand the electronics behind it, as opposed to a cell phone, which, you know, if you drop it, it's broken and nobody can fix it.
Yeah, and it's the access to actually do something with it. I mean, we had a candlestick phone on the desk from 1907, so it's like, here's this real thing. It's actually 111 years old, but yeah, you can pick it up and try it out and see if you can figure out how people used to use it. And the dynamo still worked. You could crank it and ring the bell, and it was great for the kids. I think it was also really good, really great for a lot of the adults who, again, a taste of the past. They remembered having these things. We had one of the big Western Electric hall phones that everyone had of a certain age at some point. You know, we had people come up and see the van and go, oh, I used to work for the phone company. And, you know, I would shake their hand. I used to work against the phone company. Great to meet you. I think for all involved, it was just there's just something magical about being able to pick this stuff up and use it again.
Yeah, they want to know, how did you get that? Or you know, why is that here? What are you doing with this? And the Candlestick, I have a funny story. An older gentleman came over.
So people know, a Candlestick phone, that's the kind that they used in the 1920s, right? The operator getting in the police.
Like a party line, if you ever watch old like Lassie episodes, or,
well, yeah, just know, basically it doesn't have a dial. You pick it up, you hold the one piece to your ear,
crank,
and you speak into the mouthpiece, and the operator gets on and dials the number for you.
Yeah, you spin a crank, and that's how you switch the call.
And our crank wasn't working all that well.
Well, we had to adjust some of the parts, and this older guy, he was pointing at different things, and I started kind of paying attention to what he was saying, and we were able to get it to ring, so that was cool. He sensed that it was already producing voltage, and we just sort of adjusted the actual ringers.
He just walked right up to it and started fiddling with it, because that's what you do at Maker Faire.
Yeah, but and that's just it. It's the tactile nature of them. They're very ergonomic, and I think the other thing is it's very intimate. I think that's why people really get a lot out of it and light up with that sensation, because it's, you can hold it and it feels really solid, and it's the intimacy of that communication, just having someone speaking right so closely to you, and it's just, it's kind of a beautiful thing to see and to be able to make happen for people.
Yeah, I think the tactile nature of it is absolutely right. And another thing I think we're missing too is just phone booths in general are in such short supply these days. They've all been ripped out of every place in the city. They're almost impossible to find.
But they are impossible. There are no phone booths in the city.
Right. I mean, maybe in some kind of, you know, antiquated hotels, or, you know, the older clubs and things still have these little phone booths, but they don't have actual pay phones in them. And so being able to go into this booth and you have this sense of privacy around you when you're into that booth and you're talking and you see it working in front of your eyes, you know, it is kind of inspiring, because it reminds you of why you got into phones, because there's something magical about the phone. There's something magical about the way it works and the way that information is transferred through a wire from one person's mouth to another person's ear. And, you know, it's probably what really inspired all of us way back in the day to become phone freaks, because the phone system itself was this incredibly magical computer system that we wanted to figure out how it works. And I think children have that same attitude towards the world. All children are in a sense scientists, and they are in a sense hackers, because they maintain that attitude. And hackers, I think, throughout their lives maintain this childlike attitude of curiosity towards all things. And it's just, I think, a matter of maintaining that sense of curiosity that is really important. And that's what Maker Faire does for all of us. Once a year, I'm going back all the time.
And it's not just limited to here in New York. There are Maker Faires all over the world. Actually, Kyle, we were talking about finally making it to the UK Maker Faire, since we have lots of friends over there. And we found out that this year was apparently the last one they had. It was in Newcastle upon Tyne, I believe is how you say that.
Yes.
And for some reason, it's not going to be there, and they don't have another place yet. Hopefully they find something, because I think the UK really deserves Maker Faire, Brexit or not. There are other ones, though, in other parts of the world, like Rome is a big one. That's coming up really soon, actually. And there's one in Berlin, and of course, there's the Bay Area. And there are many Maker Faires all over the place as well. So if you happen to see this, and you can go to makerfaire.com, makerfaire.com, you can learn about Maker Faires in your area, maybe start one of your own. Just be a part of the magic, because they really get the hacker spirit. And that's something that deserves to be noted whenever it occurs. And it's just an incredible thing to see, especially when you see young people who are into this in a healthy way, into technology, building things, breaking things, fixing things, and just asking a whole lot of questions. I just, you know, to me, it's just the most amazing thing that we started the magazine back in the 80s when the phone company was this mighty monolithic entity that we couldn't even get our minds around. And now here we are, with the last remaining phone company van of from New York Telephone, and a payphone, and the old fashioned way of using the network, and we're the only ones holding on to that, it seems, other than some you know, old linesmen and people used to work for the phone company. But it's weird that the hackers are the ones that are most interested in preserving the system, not the companies that actually ran it. And I guess that's not that surprising when you think about the motivations behind each. But like you said, Alex, it's kind of a childish way, in a good way, a childish way of being curious and just wanting to play with things. And that's what phone freaking, that's what hacking has always been about. So I'm glad we're able to hold on to it. If the companies themselves don't appreciate what they had, at least we do. And at least the kids of today are learning through our eyes. And I think that's really awesome.
Hear, hear.
And learning so much, there was just a buzz of a fervor of activity all weekend, and so many different interesting people came up to us, and
those kids from India were amazing.
The other exhibits, the presenters, people who were from other countries visiting and presenting stuff. It was just fantastic. Yeah. Really a positive experience, and a big thanks to everyone at Maker Faire from us and for making us feel right at home there as a part of the vending and exhibition.
And I got to tip my hat to the venue as well, the New York Hall of Science. I think it's one of those kind of hidden gems that a lot of people don't really consider or still know about. But if you're local to the city and you've got younger people in your life who might be interested, you know, take them out there because it's a heck of a place. There's lots of fun things to do and learn. I went there when I was a kid, and you know, bringing the kids and my family there now there, and it's a heck of a place, and there's so much to learn, even when Maker Faire isn't going on in the fairgrounds.
Right, you get this like feeling you're kind of carrying on the World's Fair sort of in the future.
Hey, I was at the World's Fair as a small child, and I remember, and everybody around my age who grew up in New York remembers this, the World's Fair, the picture phones, where you were being shown this new form of technology that one day would be commonplace. And we still don't really have good picture phones, but whatever. I just remember picking up one of these phones and talking to a kid that I didn't know, that was someplace around, probably just around the corner. But it's the same basic thrill. And only a few meters away from where we were at the Hall of Science, just to think about that, to think back to the 60s when that took place, and to see that being mimicked in different ways here in 2018. So, wow, it's really amazing. And, of course, you mentioned the atmosphere of the Hall of Science, also the atmosphere of the surrounding communities. Corona, one of my favorite communities, lots of street food all the time being just cooked right there on the corner. And not far from Jackson Heights and Flushing, great places to hang out and explore a little bit. Hopefully a lot of people did that as well. We have other things going on. In fact, we have a special event we're going to announce. We've been kind of hinting at this over the past few hours to our fans on Twitter. We are going to be doing something unheard of, unprecedented, first of its kind ever, never before, maybe never again. Who knows? Next week, October 3rd. My God, next week is October. Wow. Okay, sorry, miles away. Just can't believe how fast. Next week, October 3rd, is when the presidential alert feature on everybody's cell phone is going to be tested. That's right, everyone in America with a cell phone will receive the same text message on the same day at the same time. Now, FEMA, our friends at FEMA, will be conducting a nationwide wireless emergency alert test, WEA, the scariest radio station in the world. It'll be taking place at 2:18 p.m., and that will be followed by a nationwide emergency alert test on broadcast TV and radio. So it's going to be a day of panic, I guess. So, okay, 2:18 p.m., everyone's phone is going to go off with an alert, and that will be followed a couple of minutes later by, I guess, every TV and radio station, including this one, broadcasting a national emergency alert. Now, God help us if there actually is an emergency then, because we're going to be testing everything. It's going to be, people are probably going to be trying to ignore it. According to FEMA, the test will assess the readiness to distribute an emergency message nationwide and determine whether improvements are needed. The test on your phone will read presidential alert and will include the following text This is a test of the National Wireless Emergency Alert System. No action is needed. And that test will last about 1 minute. They say 100 mobile carriers will partake in the test. I imagine flip phones probably won't work. I don't know. Maybe they will. We have a special fact sheet from FEMA all about this, the Integrated Public Alert and Warning System. IPAWS, they love their acronyms, don't they? IPAWS, Integrated Public Alert and Warning System, National Test, October 3rd, 2018, National EAS and WEA Test. Now, Federal Emergency Management Agency, in coordination with the Federal Communications Commission, will conduct a nationwide test of the Emergency Alert System and Wireless Emergency Alert System on October 3rd, 2018. The test messages will be sent using FEMA's IPAWS, which enables authorities to send emergency messages to multiple communications networks, including the EAS and WEA, as part of the nation's modern alert and warning infrastructure. So actually, what will be happening is part of the same alert. The alert first goes to your phone and then goes to broadcast TV and radio, which I guess that kind of puts you at a disadvantage if you don't have a phone and you only have a TV. You have to wait a couple of minutes. The WEA test message begins at 2:18 p.m. The EAS message will be sent at 2:20 p.m., and that's Eastern time. This will be the first nationwide presidential-level WEA test. And if you want to opt out of it, you're out of luck. You can't. This is mandatory. You cannot opt out. You can't opt out, Alex.
I wasn't planning on it.
All right, well, just get used to it. It's happening.
I was sort of looking forward to it.
So what's the next best thing?
Well, we decided it would be fun to make this an event. And so what we're doing is we're going to be reserving the space downstairs at the Commons Cafe here in Brooklyn. And what that means is at around 2 o'clock, we are inviting 100 or so, maybe a couple hundred people, our closest friends, you included, to come by and gather in a room with your phones out, with the volume up, and we are going to capture this event in a way that nobody else will. Imagine hundreds of phones going off at the same time with various emergency alert tones, and The uniqueness of this kind of event is, it cannot be overstated. This is something that has never happened before. Now, short of a real emergency, which you cannot predict, I don't think we'll have another opportunity to actually capture something like this, where so many people are experiencing the same thing at the same time. The whole country experiencing this all at once. We want to do all kinds of experiments. I want to have at least one phone turned off, and then we turn it on again in a couple hours, see if that gets the tones. But basically have some fun with this.
What about reception?
What about reception? Oh, I hope we get cell phone service down there.
Has anyone looked into that?
That's a big deal. We're in Brooklyn. Yeah, people get cell phone service downstairs. But we're going to check.
I was looking earlier. I think that's part of our planning. But we may have people on the sidewalk versus people inside the building. Maybe the signal will be that much more powerful because of the occasion.
You know what? We'll get a booster if we have to.
And, yeah.
Don't worry. We'll make sure this works. So anyway, we've talked to a number of people about this so far. People at the cafe, people at the radio station. Everybody we talked to is super enthused by it. It's really kind of neat to see that kind of reaction. And in fact, we were told that we should record a promo for the radio station. And since we usually like to get out of here pretty quickly, I figured maybe we could save some time and make the promo here live on the air. So does that sound good to you guys?
This is a little nerve-wracking.
It's a little nerve-wracking, I know, and it's hard to get it right the first time, so we'll probably have to take a couple of takes. Well, what we can do is, edit it together a little bit later on and then put it on the air, and it'll be perfect. So what I will do is read the first headline there. You read the second paragraph, Rob.
Okay.
Alex, you read the third, and Kyle, you read that single line at the end.
All right. What about
that.
The dates and the times?
I'll take care of that because I'm going to come back. I'm going to start it and I'm going to end it. All right?
All right.
All right. Let's see if we can get this right. I'm sorry, folks. This is how radio production in the modern age is done. We sometimes have to double up.
Take notes from the pros here.
Yeah, maybe not. Not in this case, anyway.
Okay. Do you need a countdown?
No. It doesn't matter because I'm going to use digital editing later. So.
All right.
Yeah, I don't need that. All right. Here we go. Ready? Quiet on set. Come to the first ever wireless emergency alert party.
Shortly after 2 p.m. on Wednesday, October 3rd, every cell phone in the nation will receive a...
For God's sake, God. Rob, really? The first sentence?
Frozen peas.
Yes, I got mine perfectly.
Okay, let's try this again.
All right, take two.
Shortly after 2 p.m. on Wednesday, October 3rd, every cell phone in the nation will receive a wireless emergency alert test for the first time in history. This is a mandatory feature. You cannot opt out of it. This will give Donald Trump the ability to send a message to every mobile phone in the nation whenever he wants.
While we can't stop this from happening, we can certainly add ourselves to the history. And what could be more historic than having a crowd of people together adding to the cacophony when all of our phones start sounding alerts at the same time?
This is an event that will be captured for posterity, so don't miss it.
Oh, I'm sorry, I froze up. That's right. Wednesday, October 3rd at 1:30 p.m. at the Commons Cafe, Brooklyn, New York. At the Commons Cafe, 388 Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn, New York. For more information, check. You know what? Where do we check? We didn't work that part out yet. For more information, follow us on Twitter. No, hold on. This is in conjunction with Off the Hook. For more information, follow Hacker Radio Show on Twitter or email oth@2600.com. And you know what? They can just do a voiceover.
Sounds
if
good.
They have to add anything else.
You all know right, what?
Fine. We're done. We're done with that.
That's what you get.
That wasn't too bad.
No, that wasn't too bad.
And through the magic of nonlinear editing, that will be perfect. All right, what else are we talking about?
In Lancashire, where Mrs. Buckley lives, every July, peas grow there.
Don't beat up yourself.
Sorry, I do professional voice work, so this is a bit.
I didn't like my so don't miss it.
You can say it again if you want.
I don't have this my after card.
This is an event that will be captured for posterity, so don't miss it.
See, now the first one doesn't seem so bad, does it?
No, that sounded way worse.
Yeah. I'd like to know what other people do. Obviously, not everybody can make it to this event. People all over the country, though, including Hawaii and Alaska, will be a part of this as well. So we want to hear all kinds of feedback. And the cool thing about this is I think we're the only people planning a large event with lots of phones. So this is a hacker thing. This is an off-the-hook thing. This is a BAI thing. Let's make it unique. Let's make it fun. And I know it sucks that Trump has this power to do this. Actually, it was signed under Obama. It's just a bad idea because it can be abused. But we can have fun with the technology.
The real fun part is that it's just such a diversity of equipment, such a diversity of carriers, different tones and sounds, different ways the messages, the timing, ways they will be delivered, and the timing, of course, that all will play into how this works. So we're really interested in what it will be like with such a mix of people and devices on this network.
Well, that's right. And I think we should encourage people to bring a myriad of devices as well. Bring your old phones. Bring your new phones.
Here's the thing. We have a week to figure this out, or a little less than a week. Only WEA-compatible cell phones that are switched on and within range of an active cell tower and whose wireless provider participates in WEA will be capable of receiving the test message. So I guess we have to see if our cell phones are WEA-compatible, which I imagine most are.
Mine is. I got a flood alert yesterday.
And I didn't. Why didn't I get this?
Yeah, but
I was in the same place.
It was serious. It was like a foot of water.
It was a foot of water for me, too. I didn't get an alert.
Were you maybe upstairs and he was downstairs?
We were next to each other. We were doing a different radio show. I think it's all of a sudden you got an alert.
It's because your phone's waterproof. That's why. Yeah.
Well, my shoes aren't, I can tell you that. I imagine most new phones, i.e. new phones being within the last 5 years, are capable of this. I imagine most wireless companies are going to be participating. But if you know of exceptions, let us know, because this is how we learn about things.
I think you should bring the candlestick phone, just so people know.
I'm pretty sure that's not going to work. Landlines are not going to get this. Another advantage to landlines, by the way.
Very true.
Now, this WEA will include a special tone. Some describe it as quite loud. This is FEMA saying this. Some describe it as quite loud. Oh, this is going to be awesome. And vibration, both repeated twice. A distinctive WEA message dialog box also appears in the mobile device's screen. Here's a question. What language will the WEA test message be in? Well, WEA currently only supports messages in English, Oh, that's the only one. You thought I was going to say Spanish, didn't you? No, it's only English. How do you like that? When things hit the fan, only English speakers will be told about it. The IPAWS can deliver emergency message content in multiple languages and is working with private sector systems to support delivery of messages in more languages in the future. Come on. Really, what does it take? What does it take to transmit in a different language? It's really not that hard.
So this means the sizable population of this country who don't speak English, or at least don't completely understand English, are going to have their phones make a scary noise, do something they can't control, and then show them something that they might or might not understand. What could possibly go wrong with this?
Well, there have been EAS tests before this. There was one in November 2011, one in September 2016, but that's emergency alert system. That's over the radio. And I remember we taped a whole bunch of channels and saw all kinds of weirdness going on with mistakes that were made. This is the first time ever that this has been done over the cell phone network. So that's going to be something everybody will be talking about next week. You can be a part of some history here at the radio station, here at the Commons Cafe downstairs, 388 Atlantic Avenue. Wednesday, October 3rd, gather at 1:30 p.m. Test happens shortly after 2, and it'll be a fun time. I think we're broadcasting it live as well.
I think this is going to be great. I think cacophony was the perfect word.
Yeah, don't overuse it, Alex. You can't use words like that too
often.
It's
kind of a pun, too, isn't it, right?
How's it a pun?
Well, because it has phone.
Because it has phone.
Phone in the...
Like telephony.
Yeah. You know, our listeners, if you want to call us and talk about other things, please feel free. We're at 347-335-0818. We'd love to hear from you.
And definitely spread the word, because we want to get as many people together to share this moment as possible. If the president is going to have the ability to grab us all by the smartphone whenever he wants, we're going to need some community support. So, yeah, come down to the Commons Cafe, our pleasant neighbors downstairs, 388 Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn, New York. And join us midday Wednesday for some fun.
Yes, absolutely. That'll be unique. That'll be something we've never actually done before, so we're looking forward to that. So again, our phone number, if you have any feedback or things to discuss with us, 347-335-0818. We have calls on the line. Let's take one of them. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead. I see. That sound... That sound is not an emergency alert tone.
It's a sound you don't really hear that often anymore either.
Well, if you went to Maker Faire, you would have heard that sound by our van, because we were playing recordings. In fact, I don't know if many people remember, dial tones used to sound more harsh, and we were playing that one. It drew some complaints, in fact. People described it as a scratching noise or a buzz, but that was a dial tone. Before that rather pleasant-sounding dial tone, it had a different sound. I don't have a recording of it, so I can't play it. But again, our phone number is 347-335-0818. Let's wait for a couple more people to call in, and then we'll see if they actually stay on the line. That would be nice. There's apparently a problem with Apple Watches. Late last week, Apple released more details about how, with certain opt-in settings, Apple Watch Series 4 will contact emergency services if the watch detects that you've had a hard fall. Can your watch do that? It can detect if you've fallen down. Before actually contacting first responders, the Apple Watch will try to give numerous urgent alerts, tapping the wearer on the wrist, sounding a very loud alarm, not the kind we're going to have next week, but a different kind of alarm, and also displaying a visual alert. How does a watch tap you? There's actually a physical tap mechanism?
I have no idea. This whole thing just sounds completely ridiculous.
I imagine it's a component like you'd have in a pager that vibrates and does some sort of... kinetic movement like a vibrate mode in a cell phone.
Okay.
But I'm not sure. I don't own one.
It's just weird that they call it tapping. But anyway, the alert gives the options of immediately calling an emergency SOS, or tapping "I fell but I'm okay," or "I did not fall," or "I dropped my watch and I'm still standing up," or all kinds of things. If the Apple Watch detects that the wearer is immobile for about a minute, it begins a 15-second countdown. After that, the watch will contact emergency services, which often can use mobile phone data to locate the wearer. Apple says that the feature is automatically enabled for users who have entered their age into their profile and are over 65. The mostly opt-in nature of the service may mitigate, but not completely address concerns raised by some lawyers in the immediate aftermath of the September 12th announcement of the watch. I didn't know about the September 12th announcement. It sounds rather ominous. Apparently, a law professor at the University of California, Davis, was quick to point out that by inviting the police into your home, Apple Watch wearers may be opening themselves up to criminal liability. I guess that's something to concern yourself with, right, Alex?
Yeah, sure. I mean, if they receive a 911 call, they are entitled to enter your home if they believe that you are in danger or you need help, you need some kind of community assistance. That is a Fourth Amendment exception. And normally, the home is sacrosanct. I mean, the home is one of the places that's actually specifically mentioned in the Fourth Amendment, so you would ordinarily need a warrant to enter the home if you're a law enforcement officer.
Or maybe think it's your apartment instead.
That's an issue, yes. But if they think that you're in distress, they can enter your home. So if you banged your watch or it fell perhaps from a tall shelf and it tried to tap you but you weren't wearing it or something like that and it called the police entered your home, and perhaps you had some marijuana or something like the Anarchist Cookbook or, God forbid, a red box hanging around on the
dining room
table.
None of those are really bad things. Yeah, those are all terrible examples.
Update your terms there. But
yeah, exactly. Right. But sure, then the police are in there, and anything they see that could be evidence of a crime could then subject you to arrest.
So here's, if you fall and you're wearing an Apple Watch and it rats you out, try to crawl into the hallway outside your apartment or house, into the street or something. Well, that way they won't go into your house, right?
Is that well, maybe, unless they are in such a rush to help whoever it is that's fallen and could not get up that they just step over you because they think, well, we were called for somebody who fell in an apartment and we need to step over this person. We'll get to him next.
Can't they detect the watch is what called them?
I have no idea. I mean, wow. Maybe, perhaps.
I can't believe we're having these conversations. Hey, we have a caller on the line. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
What's on your mind?
Oh, man. I remember growing up in the 80s, right? And I used to call my grandmother. She used to live on the Grand Concourse before she went to Clark City.
Uh-huh.
And I think in the mid-80s, they had that Datsun, the one you were talking about. It was a tone with a scratchy background. Now, in the 90s, the one that you hear now, that's the one that one was introduced like in the 90s, maybe even after the past 20-something years up to this day. I do remember rotary phones in the 80s, because I'm 40 years old. I remember growing up in the mid-80s. I do remember seeing rotary phones in the Bronx. It's, all over the Bronx. Uh-huh. We don't have pay phones left. Just a few. And there's still some left in Manhattan, just to correct you. What they have now is...
I said that there weren't phone booths. So there are pay phones, but you won't be able to find a booth, I don't believe.
Yeah. What they have now is... those Link NYC towers, they're very convenient. You get free calls. You can't beat that, man. And I hope that they do them nationwide because that'd be a wonderful thing.
Well, I mean, you can't beat that for certain things, but also those devices are spying on you in some ways. if they go down for one reason or another, it doesn't have the same kind of reliability of the old phone network.
Okay. Yeah, but I'm going to hang up so you can just... tell me about those ringtones, the ones I just mentioned. Take care.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for your call.
Yeah, there are different generations of switching systems, and the ringing tone, I think, was an entire part of the system. It depends on what era, but the one that he was speaking to later was, I think, synthesized in the early digital switches.
Yeah, pretty much that's why... The cadence of rings today is pretty much the same everywhere.
Because the generations before that would have been like electromechanical or something?
Electromechanical, the old step systems. Literally, every central office, every region had a different sound to it. So you could say, hey, I'm calling this particular office in the Bronx, or I'm calling this particular office in Manhattan. And you could sometimes hear it pulsing out. You could hear... just different weird sounds that were unique to those particular areas. And, you could still do that. You could still do that with electronic digital systems. But that's not where the priority of the designers is. They want things to just work the same everywhere. And it's a bit unfortunate because you lose that magic, that romance of the system where you feel like you're going somewhere distant and hearing something different.
you know, to build on what the caller said about the Link NYC prevalence, and to build on what you said, which is this issue of being the same everywhere, mm-hmm. I'm wondering if the loss of payphone booths is a universal across the United States. Are there other cities that still have payphone booths? Because I'm thinking about, you know, having lived in London for a while and then come back to New York, where payphone booths in the UK, and in London in particular, they're very iconic. They mm-hmm. still exist. You know, you see them all over the place. It's sort of a symbol of the city. And what was always interesting to me is that if you went into these payphone booths, I mean, you could, the phones were still in pretty much working order, but they were pretty much taken over by advertisements for escort services and prostitutes.
Right.
I think it's primarily because in the UK, my understanding is that prostitution is not illegal over there, but the public solicitation of prostitution is. So you put your ad in a phone booth, and that's how people know to call you, various numbers and pictures and things like that. But I think back to London, and it really is, you know, it's a symbol of the city. I mean, does Cleveland still have phone booths? Does Tulsa still have phone booths? Or is this a New York
thing? The thing is, the phone booth that we brought to Maker Faire is an indoor phone booth. It's made out of wood. It's not supposed to be outdoors. It was outdoors for that weekend. But the other ones are metallic and are designed to be weatherproof. So it's two different kinds. And I think the ones that are the indoor phone booths have been preserved in many cases inside establishments that recognize, hey, this is something I don't want to get rid of. And so they make some kind of a deal with whoever was leasing it to them. Or maybe that company just goes out of business or something and they hold on to it. So I think there are probably a bunch of those around. Not a whole lot, obviously, but certainly it's not zero. And there are some outdoor phone. I know because people send us pictures of them all the time. There are outdoor phone booths and plenty of payphones around the world. But yeah, they're in danger of disappearing.
I think a lot of the outdoor phone booths that still exist are also being commercially exploited because they're in the hands of, say, set piece rental houses for film and television production and things like that. I was walking through the filming location, which was in Manhattan near a place I used to work, where they were filming a scene of the show Gotham, which took place, I think, sometime in the past. And so they had a bunch of phone booths lined up to make the street look older. And as I looked up close to these, because I was walking down the sidewalk, they were phone booths from all over the country.
Wow.
Marked with the markings of all different telcos and things. So, you wouldn't see that on screen. They just look like a row of phone booths. But it was fun. I played with them a little bit, maybe.
We have another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead. Speak up.
Hi, Anthony.
Go ahead.
I have a question.
Yes.
What's the deal with Verizon? They put this voice box in my house and it's driving me crazy. Well, I want my landline back and I can't get a hold of them.
Yeah, I have to say, your phone doesn't sound very well connected right now. You're not on your old landline, are you?
I'm not being paranoid, but they're probably listening. Because normally a phone call doesn't last this long with me. It clicks off in 39 to 49 seconds.
What, it just cuts off usually?
Yes, yes, yes.
That's terrible.
You call me 44 to 49 seconds. If I call them, it's 39 to 49 seconds. Then it goes right off.
Interesting that it ends in a 9. You can't get a landline anymore? They won't give you one?
They're telling me they can't find a place to put one. I don't want to hear that. Other people still have their landlines in this area.
They're probably trying to push you onto Fios or something like that. Right.
Yeah. That's what it is. This box with this blue light.
Yeah, we've heard many things about that. This is tough. The best thing you can do is do what you're doing now, letting people know that this is not acceptable. You're in New York?
Yeah, I'm in Manhattan. I'm getting ready to write a letter to the advocate, Verizon advocate on West Street to see what happens.
Okay, that's good. Write to the Public Service Commission. People say, yeah, this is technology, the price of advancement. It's not true. I mean, if people say they want something that works in a particular way, and enough people say that, they'll find a way to make it happen.
Okay.
All right?
All right. Thanks. Love your show.
Thanks for listening. We hear so many things from people. It breaks my heart because, I was commenting to a friend that if you listen to radio interviews or television interviews from, say, 30 years ago, the people on the phone sounded so much better than they do now. That shouldn't be. If we're truly advancing, we should sound great. You know, it should sound great. I mean, yeah, there's Skype connections, but they're not always that good. You know, this is a technology that is proven, and if people want to continue using it, there should be a way for them to do that.
One idea I would have is talk to other people in the building and discuss kind of what is changing and what how it's structured as far as the service that is provided now in the copper realm. Are a lot of people abandoning that? Has Verizon convinced a lot of people? Are you sort of the first to sort of be coerced or coaxed to move away from it? And also, perhaps through those conversations, consider structuring it through like a business account. Maybe your management company can allocate lines and have it all under one sort of business bill or divided in some way. There's options still, but you have to really talk to other people that are there.
A PBX in your building or something that is run by the management company. That's a good idea.
Yeah, it may be possible to have sort of a private line installed specifically for that piece of equipment that the management company then operates and then issues extensions to tenants.
You don't ever have to accept this is the way it is and it's not going to change. It used to be, you know, when you made phone calls, if you were calling somebody in your own town, you didn't have to dial as many numbers. You could just dial, say, the last three digits of a small town and you'd get the particular person attached to that phone number. If you were outside the town, you'd have to dial more digits to get there. There's places where that still works in that way. There's no reason we can't operate a system that does that. Now, I'm not saying that the new way of doing things or the new ways of doing things are flawed. They are, but they also have advantages, and we shouldn't shy away from that either. But when you cut off completely any connection to the past, you're losing something. And I think what we saw at Maker Faire, we saw people enthused by that, by technology they could get their hands on, they could understand, they could see the potential and design something based on that. It's just ignorant to let go and not look back.
And you're just much more powerful. They make so much more money off of you individually as an individual resident. Mm-hmm. And you're just always going to fare better if you can try to find some kind of wholesale arrangement. And the real crux of it is, you don't want to be getting maximizing profit as individual residents for them and having the lowest possible quality service, which is what they will try to do to make the most money at the least cost to them, which will leave you with bad service. And what you're advocating for in your community is to have the best kind of communication method. If you're going to switch, if things are changing, then you want to build and have a system that you're happy with. Mm-hmm. You're going to pay for it one way or another, so you might as well have something good.
And don't even get me started on payphones. It's, you know, not everybody has a cell phone all the time. Maybe it's broken. Maybe it's out of battery. Maybe you see an emergency. You need to be able to access a network somehow. And, a reliable payphone in certain places can still be a necessity. Hey, we have another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hey, good evening, guys. We sure know about Verizon because I was the guy that cut my copper line last year and had to put Fios in. But it was interesting how you were talking about the World's Fair. And we were there in September of 63. And I remember the GM, you know, the place that they had the thing of the future and the phones and all that. But I let my sisters and my cousins, the girls all went to check the phones out.
Uh-huh.
But we were there, I think, the same Sunday, Gene Shepard did a live taping at the World's Fair.
Wow.
Broadcast. And I've heard it. I've heard it on VAI.
Yeah, Max has probably played that, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, Max has played it a couple. But, you know, you're talking about the old phone booths, right?
Yes.
Well, you got to go to Elizabeth, New Jersey, High Street and Third Avenue, Spirito's Italian Restaurant. Walk in the front door and look to the left, and there's a 40s... you know, phone booth in there. It's
40s.
Like a little house.
Wow. Okay. All right.
You guys are in the city. You go to Elizabeth, you'll have the best homemade chicken parm and raviolis you ever ate.
Well, listen, tell me this.
You got to bring butter. They got the bread, but you got to bring your own butter.
Got to bring your own butter. How interesting. But now, when you go into the phone, is there still a phone in there?
Oh, yeah. The phone's still in there, yeah.
Does it work?
It's not working. No. Oh. You got to go check it out.
Well,
you
maybe we can help really fix it. Let's get the phone working. That would be kind of cool. But we're gonna check this out. Maybe not tonight.
I've got an important question though for you guys.
Go ahead.
I have on my table. I've been here 37 years, but it's a Comdial touch tone phone. And I was wondering, I couldn't make it to the Maker Faire, but could you guys tell me where I could please get the replacement headset? Because where the male plug goes into the female head receiver, you hold it at your ear, it's broken there, and the thing, it's horrible. I've tried gluing it.
Have you looked on eBay?
Huh?
Have you looked at auction sites like eBay and places where you might find used parts?
Well, that's what I was saying. Did they have all that stuff at the Maker Faire?
It's not really like a swap meet in that sense, but you can definitely trade notes with collectors and people that do know where, you know, there might be a pile of stuff that is of the same model and make.
Well, I think what Kyle suggests is the best solution. Just go onto eBay, type Comdial into the search bar, and you'll be surprised at the number of things you see.
But I got to tell you one other thing. You're damn right about payphones. Because I don't give a damn. A lot of towns you go in, like when we go out west to forest fires, years ago, the most important thing you did when you got a break and went to town to call your family and your loved ones, you had to find a store. Like I'd always find a Ben Franklin in Idaho, Montana, California, whatever.
Wow.
And you had to get a roll of quarters because there was no cell phones or nothing, so you could run to, it was like lines at the payphones, right?
Uh-huh.
But they really should get some payphones back because it, but the other thing is when you travel, you should always have a CB radio with you because I don't care where you're at.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's going to hear you and get help to you.
Or ham radios, too, if you're at home, certainly.
Well, no, but I'm just talking about, like, if you're out traveling or on the road, mm-hmm. a CB radio is always a plus to
good.
Have.
Yeah, definitely a good backup for wireless in general. And, I just would second what you're saying about the criticality of having communications like that out in the field. One of the sections that is so popular, as Emmanuel mentioned earlier, is our payphone section. We continue to get a lot of submissions. Usually the most interesting places tend to be like islands and rural areas because it is a lifeline in that sense for those communities. Not everyone there necessarily has their own sort of line in the house or a wireless service even. And it's a sort of a community hub for communicating and getting through life, you know, interacting.
You know, and one place where payphones still exist, actually, in Manhattan, by the way, are the federal courts. I can't believe I forgot this until now.
Really?
Yeah, because you have to hand in your cell phones, literally, to federal marshals when you go in there.
Uh-huh.
So if you need to use the phone in the courthouse without having to go and retrieve your phone, and if you retrieve your phone, you have to leave immediately, then you would have to go back in through the metal detector. This whole process, especially at the Southern District, takes a long time. There's still payphones there, and people actually still use them. There was even this scene during one of the Michael Cohen proceedings where it was announced that Sean Hannity was his other client when you saw all the reporters sitting in the galley literally get up and rush out to go and use the payphones to call in the story that Sean Hannity was Michael Cohen's other secretive client. So, yeah, they still exist in federal court. It's probably the only place in Manhattan where you can find these working payphones.
So, okay, well, there is the evidence right there. If they can do it for federal courts, they can do it for individual
Absolutely.
Citizens. If there's
Good
a
point.
Need for something, they can make it work. Caller, thank you very much, and
hey,
thanks
Manuel,
for the memories.
Manuel, real quick about the payphones, right? Like in McCall, Idaho, and like in places in Montana,
mm-hmm.
like if you got like a back, like a dirt road where there's a bunch of homes, they'll have a payphone that the whole neighborhood uses, right?
Okay.
In certain places, because we've seen them. But the other thing you said about the 911 calls, as mm-hmm. I'm a fireman, you don't know how many times I was the first one in my own vehicle going to the scene and had to tell people, you know, open the doors, turn the fan on because they're smoking in there. I said, when 911 comes in, they're going to not be worrying about the fire. They're going to look to lock your tail up. So that's a good thing you said that, because once you invite them, they're welcome to come in. And if, like you said, if something's laying around, you're done, right?
Okay, well, that's a good note to end on. Thanks so much for that call, and thanks, everybody, for listening. write to us, oth@2600.com. Let me remind people that the first ever wireless emergency alert party taking place next Wednesday, starting at 1:30 p.m. at the Commons Cafe downstairs, 388 Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn. We'll be awaiting the first ever wireless emergency alert test that goes to everybody's cell phone next Wednesday afternoon. For more information, follow us on Twitter, Hacker Radio Show, or 2600. You can also write to us at oth@2600.com. And that's going to do it for us tonight. We will see you next week. Good night.
WBAI fan. They've always been, you know, the station that kicked butt and the station that said what you're not supposed to say because the people in power don't want to hear it. And I love that.
I have to celebrate you, baby.
Today is September the 26th, 2018. Do you know who has your personal data? Let me ask the question differently. Do you know who's using your personal data? Welcome to the Personal Computer Show. This is the original personal computer radio show of all things computing. I'm Hank Key and my colleague is Joe King. Podcasts of the program is available from wbai.org/archive, prn.fm, and our website, pcradioshow.org. We are on WBAI-FM, 99.5 New York, on the radio, and PRN.FM on the Internet, each Wednesday with essentially the same program, except when WBAI is in a membership drive, the programs are different. And we are preempted next week on WBAI-FM New York, but the program will return on WBAI on the air the following week. It was reported Google is quietly logging users into Chrome. This was released in early September. Chrome 69 logs the user in automatically at the moment they sign into any Google service. This led to a backlash from privacy-concerned members of the community. The first impression some users had was that the browser would start sending their data back to the Google servers. This was not the case, or at least that's what Google says. Google says it wanted to avoid situations where you could log into its services on a shared device while the browser is logged into someone else's account. This could lead to cookies and other browsing data being synchronized under an account you have nothing to do with. Attackers are using freelance job sites such as 5RR and Freelancer to distribute malware disguised as job offers. These job offers contain attachments that pretends to be the job brief, but actually they install keyloggers such as Agent Tesla or Remote Access Trojan. For those who may be looking for jobs, avoid those two job sites and actually any other job site for what information you download. Firefox installs add-ons into your browser without consent. There were two add-ons not listed anywhere else. That's fxmonitor@mozilla.org and telemetrycoverage@mozilla.org. This suggests that these add-ons has to do with something with telemetry that Firefox stated that all telemetry was turned off. Well, Mozilla wanted to collect data on how many users have opted out of telemetry, so it decided silently to install tracking into everyone's browsers to know who's opting out. It looks like that's exactly what's happening. This time, the telemetry extension made clear effort to hide its activity by only showing up on a debug page and never asking anything else from the user. Well, looks like it's time to use another browser. Private browsing, or privacy mode or incognito mode, is a privacy feature in some web browsers to disable browsing history and the web cache. This allows a person to browse the web without storing any local data that could be retrieved at a later date. Well, a new study from a Vanderbilt professor commissioned by the trade group Digital Content Next found when users switch to an incognito browsing session online, Google can retroactively link back to the users thanks to how deep its digital tentacles reach into the rest of that same user's online experience. If you read the fine print on incognito mode, it brings up a whole lot of disclaimers. A person fires up a private browser session in Chrome on websites that run ads from Google Online Marketplace. Anonymized cookies are dropped on the browsers associated with the user. If the same person leaves private browsing mode and logs into Google services like Gmail or YouTube, the act of signing into Google makes it possible to connect the earlier web activity to the now identified user. The study notes, Google collected or inferred over two-thirds of the information through passive means. Both Android and Chrome send data to Google even in the absence of any user interaction. We have it backwards with cell phones in which function follows form. It should be form follows function. It's a principle associated with architectural and industrial design which says that the shape of a building or an object should primarily relate to its intended functions or purpose. Let's get back to basics of a digital cell phone. What an absolute minimum in component parts. You find that it contains just a few individual parts. A circuit board containing the brains of a phone, an antenna to receive the signal and send the signal, a liquid crystal display, an LCD, a keyboard, which is a virtual keyboard, a microphone, a speaker, and, of course, a battery. Remember when phone batteries used to last past bedtime? Without dozens of apps running in the background, your new cell phone should maintain its battery life longer than the typical smartphone. Some of these phones can last on a single charge for days or even go for a whole week without being plugged in. Back in the 1990s, my first cell phone required battery recharge once a week. We now have made progress. I need to recharge the battery each night. The cell phone has evolved into a modern-day Swiss knife smartphone of today. In reality, we have now a personal computer with a built-in camera, GPS, FM radio, and a host of other features with telephony operation in which all the hardware is stuffed into the original basic cell phone design. Something has to give. It is the proverbial stuffing 10 pounds of sugar into a 5-pound bag. When you're in the market for a new smartphone, what features do you typically look for? Perhaps you need to know what processor is installed, or the quality of its camera. The battery's quality is another key decision maker when picking out a new phone. The one-time user removable battery in a cell phone has morphed into a non-removable battery. The de facto battery design today is the non-removable battery. There are two versions of the non-removable battery. On one end of the spectrum is Motorola, in which the user can remove and replace the battery, but it is not a snap-on process. You need to do some disassembly of the unit to change the battery. On the other end of the spectrum, we have Apple. The Apple battery is designed to retain up to 80% of its original capacity at 500 complete charge cycles. Since the iPhone unit is charged each day, the wear factor on the battery becomes a factor in less than 2 years. The one-year warranty includes service charges for a defective battery. If it is out of warranty, Apple offers a battery service for $79 plus about $7 shipping, subject, of course, to local taxes. If the Apple Store or Apple Authorized Service Provider has replacement batteries in stock, the process should be completed within hours, allowing you to walk out with your iPhone on the same day. If the replacement battery is not in stock, how many can do without the use of a cell phone for a few days? It's not something you usually see advertised. Removable batteries can be taken out of the phone usually by opening up the back plate and taking it out. Non-removable batteries will be encased within the phone's vital components. It'll be hard, if not impossible, to remove the battery without first tampering with very important parts of the phone. Despite its name, non-removable batteries are actually removable. The problem is it often requires so many special tools that it's not practical or feasible to expect the average user to be able to remove one. For instance, it may involve tasks such as undoing the adhesive between the screen and the phone. In short, if you're not an expert, it's very hard to do, and if you have any skepticism about doing it yourself, don't do it. When the battery dies in a non-replaceable unit, the main solution is to bring it to a repair store. This is a nasty surprise for people who believe they can simply remove the battery and get a new one. So why do companies make phones with non-removable batteries? Despite its restrictive nature, there are advantages to them. One advantage of the non-removable battery in the phones is a tighter design. Because a removable battery phone needs to have a backplate, it can compromise the overall design of the phone. Non-removable phones have the battery tucked away in electronics, which means they have little need for a back panel. This allows the manufacturers to create the phone out of high-quality materials and produce a luxury-feeling phone. It also means that non-removable battery phones are slimmer. We now have it backwards. Function follows form. With a non-user replaceable battery, it also helps with recovering a stolen phone. A removable battery can be taken out by a thief and stop the phone from tracking its movement. With the battery safely inside the phone, it makes it harder for a thief to disable security or tracking features. Of course, there's a huge problem with non-removable batteries. They are non-removable. This is, of course, can be a deal breaker for many. Once the battery begins going south, and it will, as the battery is usually the first thing to begin failing, you will also threaten to take the phone with it. This can only be solved with either a great deal of expertise in disassembling phones or by taking it to a repair shop. As such, for the long term, a non-removable battery can bite back in the future. Removable batteries have advantages. Having a battery that can be removed has many benefits. The most obvious one is user replacement after the old one dies. If you like, you can even have a charged spare battery on standby, which you can swap out with your main one if it runs out of a charge at a crucial moment. There's an argument claiming that removing the battery is a good way to shut off a frozen phone. But non-removable battery phones are now adding ways to reboot a stuck phone without needing to touch the battery. A lot of the newer phones only have non-removable battery, with no option for a removable version. While removable batteries are a useful feature, you may find yourself excited for the newest device to be released. Which to get? There's one thing you need to ask yourself. Do you see yourself using the same exact device for, more than 2 years? If you want to maximize the lifespan of your phone, a non-removable battery will be a thorn in your side. Pick out a phone that has a replaceable battery and read up on how easy it is to get a spare. That way you can keep your phone going for as long as possible. While battery being removable or non-removable isn't a widely advertised feature, it can sometimes make or break a deal on a purchase. Does a non-removable battery bother you, or have you been happily enjoying the phones without a single battery issue?
You know, Hank, it's I think, a variation on Murphy's Law. Murphy said, if anything can go wrong, it would. I like the corollary to Murphy's Law. Murphy was an optimist. A couple of years ago, I needed a new phone, and I wanted